like packing rice from one thing into another. Oh, hello.
Hi, welcome to Meditation.
We're just catching up.
Welcome to this, the final season
closing 2018
program of Cambridge Inside Out. I'm Robert Winters.
Judy Nathans.
And,
yeah, because it was also the last city council meeting last night.
City council meeting for the year. It's not the last one forever. They'll be back.
Of 2018.
Right, of 2018.
But not back till the 7th.
That's right, yeah. And like we'll be off next week and the following week because of the holidays.
Right.
So
right.
Happy holidays to everybody.
Right. So
we had a little fun last night at City Hall.
Fun, is that what you're calling it?
You know, it's I didn't know about fun really,
but I watched it.
You know, sometimes it's interesting. Sometimes, you know, there's the dynamics of not only the city councilors, but also the input from the public and people who are not there in the public, but, you know, speaking sort of from beyond, you know, kind of influence it. So the big item last night, there was a lot of other little bits and pieces.
Yeah.
The item that was kind of at the center of attention, actually there were two. There was the cannabis zoning.
True.
Right?
Yeah.
And then there was this late order from the previous week that Denise Simmons said.
Charter right,
And then she exercised her charter right because she knew there was going to be some controversy or discussion about it. And it was kind of interesting how the controversy evolved. But basically the idea was there was a proposal from Governor Baker that was filed last December.
Did it come from him or did it come from the House and endorsement? That's confusing
to me. It came from Governor Baker. It was House Bill 4075, I believe.
Right.
And it was sold
a year ago, though. I mean, that's according to Denise. Yeah.
And it was an act for it was a housing choice initiative.
Called the Housing Choice Bill.
Right. Mm-hmm. And in its initial incarnation,
which is the 7.5 version.
Right. Yeah. So for that version, which I think actually.
Right. And Robert also has both versions on his website.
Yeah, actually, I want to say something about that, too.
Okay.
So initially what it was very specific about doing something to produce more housing growth. In areas that typically don't go along with it.
Right.
Right? So,
which means multi or apartments or whatever.
Yeah. So you know, arguably places like Cambridge and Somerville and Boston in recent years have been
trying to do their part.
Yeah, stepping up to kind of meet the projected demand, the current demand and projected demand for how much housing is necessary for all the people who've been coming to the area to seek the jobs that we've been producing.
The word affordable isn't necessarily in there.
No. Right. And that was kind of part of the controversy.
Sure.
So that was what it was. And it was the mechanism. And by the way, there have been attempts for a decade or more to try and address this problem of the suburban community sort of zoning out.
Right. You're talking about on the state and the legislature.
Yeah. So the legislature sort of tried a few things over the years. It was actually several decades ago is when they passed what they called Chapter 40B, which was the snob zoning, anti-snob zoning. Which basically
That has been effective, yes? No?
You know, it's a two-edged sword. Mm. So,
what is 40B?
So 40B in a nutshell, and again, I'm not the world's greatest expert in this, but 40B in a nutshell was a way of getting suburban towns, not suburban towns, because you could do it in Cambridge too, but it was for especially targeting towns that had below a certain threshold, 10% of what they would, what could be called affordable housing units. Mm-hmm. I think that refers to subsidized housing units, not necessarily including things that are what you might call naturally occurring affordable places, because there are a lot of places where, with no regulations at all, there's affordable rents.
Affordable rent, right.
You know, in fact, a lot of places, including Cambridge, used to once upon a time had affordable rents without regulation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you got to understand what the terminology means.
Okay.
So what they did is they said if you're a housing developer of low-income housing, and again, it's not, you don't have to be exclusive. I think it's something like if you're
like a percentage of your housing.
Yeah, if you want to do a housing project that's, I think, at least 25%, quote, affordable, unquote, then you could kind of get a streamlined process. You could bypass certain zoning rules and then build your project. Okay, and that's actually produced some housing.
And it wouldn't depend on the local municipal body vetoing it.
Right.
You bypass that process.
I don't think you can. You bypass everything, but the thing is you certainly bypass some things.
Okay.
So you still have to go in front of a local either planning board or some other responsible board.
Okay.
In order to get your comprehensive permit, but the thing is that you don't have to
get your built. Yeah. Okay.
Go through everything. Okay. Now, there are actually provisions in there, so you can even in a community like Cambridge, which has in excess of the threshold of so-called affordable housing units, you can still seek a comprehensive permit, and you can streamline the process to some degree, right? Whether this has been effective or not, hard to say. One thing I think is factually correct is that oftentimes a developer who wants to just build a housing project, not necessarily with an affordability component, goes to a town, says, I want to build this project. Mm-hmm. And then the town says, well, we don't want you to build that project. And they go, oh, really? Okay, in that case, I'm going to do a 40B project.
I see. So they and first they ask rent. Nicely, and then they say, well,
right.
we're going
so
to use this
leverage. It has often been used as a bit of a bludgeon in order to almost negotiate the project that you want to do. Now, so housing gets produced. So I guess you could argue that that's a good thing. But I don't know that that's exactly how 40B was intended to work.
Right, so. but I think the idea was that a town should allow more apartment buildings, regardless of who lives there. And I guess they didn't like them because it would mean
so,
more kids in the schools.
So when zoning enabling legislation first appeared in Massachusetts, which goes back to, I believe, the 1920s, I think initially zoning was... fair to say, was there, as they often say, to keep the smokestacks away from the nursery schools, to separate out uses. So, they have categories for residential use, commercial, industrial, open space, whatever. Mm-hmm. So I think, there's just a few categories.
Yeah.
And then over time, they fine-tuned it a bit, for better or worse, to allow high-density residential, low-density residentials, single-family-only type zoning.
What's the most restrictive zoning in Cambridge? What's the letter?
Resident A.
Okay.
So it's lowest density. I think it might be 0.35 FAR. I'm not 100% sure. It could be 0.5.
Okay.
And it's single-family zoning. Mm. Now, there's not that much of that, really, in Cambridge, and I think it's sort of... there exists because of it's sort of an acknowledgement of the fact that historically there were some of these established neighborhoods with these, the West Cambridge sort of architecturally significant, kind of estates.
The historic districts, really.
Yeah. Now there's some people who would love to obliterate it all because, those are those rich people and you got to go after the rich people. Then there are other people who says, Cambridge...
They pay taxes, too.
Yeah.
A lot of them.
Cambridge works as pretty well as a kind of a diverse housing stock. So there's a mix of low density, middle density, single family, two family, three family, big apartment buildings, whatever.
Rental.
I mean, I tend to fall in the camp that I think it's okay to have a mix. Should you necessarily have areas that don't allow anything but single family housing? I'm not 100% sure how I feel about that.
Yeah.
But the problem is not Cambridge. The problem is that if you go out to, the Belmonts and the Westons of this world, they'll zone, and they have apparently they have the right to do it. They'll zone and pretty much say nothing, no multifamily housing at all. Mm. In terms of lot size for every dwelling unit.
More Weston than Belmont. Belmont is...
Right. More like a lot of two families and whatever. But it's not... There's not a lot of high density in Belmont.
Condo.
But if you go out to Weston, it's sort of more like... I think they kind of want to keep their country like setting.
Well, Weston is single families.
Typically, exactly. All right. Now, the thing is that maybe that's okay if you're away from where the jobs are, away from where transit exists. Maybe having high density in a place where the only way you can get in and out of it is by automobile. Mm. Maybe you don't want too much density in a place like that, perhaps. But there are some communities that actually have T access, which have relatively low
densities. Or commuter rail access.
Which, you know,
that's a whole other story about proving it, but
Right. So there's been efforts over the years to try and address this, to sort of get the... I mean, I think some years ago, the MAPC, Metropolitan Area Planning Council, came out with this 2030 vision of what the housing production would have to be to meet
the needs of the
fact that the people were coming here for the jobs. And you know, there's some places like Cambridge and Somerville to some degree, and Boston, which is been basically stepping up to the plate
Boston,
to try and meet or exceed
50,000 units by a certain time.
Exactly.
They pledged that.
But meanwhile, when you get just outside of like these like three communities, maybe a little more than three, it drops off real fast.
Yeah.
And so how do you address that, right? So there was this bill from the Governor Baker, which says pretty much what we're going to do is, right now, currently, Massachusetts is not, is I think, maybe, what is it, 10 or 20 states that require a two-thirds vote in order to enact zoning laws.
I thought they said only 10 states.
Maybe as low as 10.
Yeah.
Right? You know, and so they write, they're identifying that two-thirds threshold as sort of being the stumbling block. I'm not convinced of that, only because I think the real problem in a place like Weston is that it's not a matter of whether they could reach a two-thirds vote in order to allow higher
density
housing.
If they're all the same mindset, then what difference does it make?
If they're not going to get two-thirds, they're probably not going to get a majority either.
Right.
Now, maybe there's a few places like Newton or Brookline or something
Town meetings. I don't know how that would work. It's a lot more people.
It's two-thirds of town meeting then.
Well, that's a lot of people.
Yeah. So the thing is that the idea was that we're going to drop the threshold to a 50% simple majority to enact zoning legislation that is specific to several housing-related matters. This includes things like allowing some higher density, doing some what they call cluster housing. So you know, you have open space, but you cluster some higher density things around there. You allow things like accessory dwelling units. Multifamily housing would be then permitted too. And the thing is that if you would simply pass a 50% threshold to permit it, then it would be allowed. You don't have to meet the higher threshold of two-thirds.
Yeah, but you're right. It's like assuming the makeup of that body is going to be, that's going to make the difference. And I agree with you that you can't count on that.
I guess
people could be elected, you know, versus like how do they feel about zoning?
Right.
I don't know. I mean,
so what my remark, I don't always speak at city council meetings.
I heard you.
I made my point, which is basically that I actually agree with the goals. You know, I think that requiring multifamily housing, at least in, it doesn't have to be citywide in any given city and town, but they have to permit areas. You can't citywide ban multifamily homes. That's just ridiculous, right? And also just saying that you're going to have a citywide density threshold that's going to say for every dwelling unit you need to have a quarter acre, right? You know, maybe if you go way out in the country, that's all right. But the thing is, as you get closer to town or any place, certainly within T access, it's kind of ridiculous, right? So, for example, if you go into even in a town like Weston, there is actually a commuter rail that goes to Weston. So, shouldn't there be permitted high density things at least close to commuter rail stops? Okay. So Governor Baker and the people who helped draft this. They said, well, you know, the problem we are identifying currently the problem to be this two-thirds threshold, you know, and then they have these wonderful goals. But I'm not convinced that the two-thirds threshold is the real problem.
Yeah.
I think the problem is that there are cities and towns which even they won't even achieve a simple majority to allow some of these totally reasonable things. So I guess my argument would be maybe a little more draconian in a way, depending on your perspective, which is to simply remove the capacity of a city and town to
even
zone,
regulate that?
Well, I mean, it's state-enabling legislation.
So it'd be like 40B then?
Right. Except that 40B is very specific to the production of
idea that you can do this without getting the approval of a body.
Right. So the thing is that right now, you know, if a town says we only allow single-family homes in our town, you say, sorry, you can't do that. That, you know, that's that was what I, that's the change I would make, is that you can't
it is pretty draconian.
Zone it out of existence. So in other words, you don't
that
have to.
That sounds very socialist, Robert.
Well, I think it's just more realist because it doesn't say you can't have single family portions of your town.
But you
but
have
the thing
to,
is you have to allow some part of your to town be, to allow multifamily,
right.
Maybe even apartment buildings.
You have to be part of the world in a way. You have to be a little
that's right.
kinder and
right. Because
and
if you don't, what
your,
happens then is you transfer all of the burden of providing all of the housing to places like Cambridge, Somerville, and Boston.
Yeah.
And that's not fair.
Yeah.
Right? So that's kind of
especially
my perspective.
Especially when you're driving into our, and on, using our highways to get to your high-tech jobs.
Right. Exactly. Right? So that's how I would
share
change
the burden
it.
Is what
and
you're saying.
I think in a way
you think that would ever...
I don't know, but you know, the
someone must have proposed that over the years.
Right, and maybe it was defeated repeatedly, and that's the reason why they're trying this. Okay?
Right.
Yeah. All right, so I don't know that it's the end of the world if this thing passes, by the way. I think,
do you think
you know,
it will, though? I mean, all right, so now it's in an
right,
informal
well, here's,
session.
Here's the problem, you know.
Yeah, they had
and,
to check on what
there are many
meant.
People, Councillor Simmons in particular, says you shouldn't let the perfect be the enemy of the good.
Right.
Right? Okay, so there's this proposal here that has good goals.
Right.
But maybe
it's only a piece of the puzzle.
Right, just a piece
of the
puzzle.
Yeah.
But the thing is then what happens is the sort of more hard left elements come into the picture and they say, well, this is just a giveaway to the real estate
developers.
Yeah, it
doesn't say anything about affordability.
It's not about affordability.
About tenant, okay, yeah.
But then again, there are many who are of the belief that the reason why things are unaffordable is because there's simply an inadequate supply of the housing. And if you start by just increasing the supply of the housing, then that's going to take a lot of the pressure off the market, which is going to lead to some level
right.
of affordability.
And there is that argument. There's people argue the other way, though, that the more luxury high-rises that get built, it prices out people looking for other stuff.
Right, but the thing is, that's where I find the rhetoric kind of interesting, because when you listen to people at public comment, or if you listen to Representative Connolly, you know, make his spiel about all this, he makes it out as if, oh, this is nothing, you know, anytime housing is built, and it's not regulated and controlled and whatever, it's a, somehow a giveaway to the evil capitalists,
to
you know,
developers.
And the developers, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, whereas, you know, the truth of the matter is that almost all housing that was ever built in Cambridge, Somerville, Boston, elsewhere, was just built and it was unregulated.
Mm.
I live in a house that was not regulated. It was just built in 1912, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So the thing is that most housing in Cambridge, Somerville, Boston, and elsewhere, it just got built. And the thing is, there was a level of affordability that in many places has disappeared.
Mm.
Right? So how do you bring back some level of affordability? I think supply is a part of the picture.
Mm. Now, but you're against the affordable housing overlay, which is another area, but in a way that...
I'm not in favor of the affordable housing overlay as been... Which is separate from this matter.
I know, but that would be increasing housing in an area that has been seen as just a resident.
Well,
right?
What I don't like about it is specifically the fact that if I'm a homeowner and I have a lot of a certain size, and I'm allowed only to have my house be up to a certain density and height, but then one of
next
these nonprofit developers comes
buys
in,
the house next door and
buys
makes four
an identical
units.
Lot and then puts in and is
but
somehow,
it's for the public good, Robert.
But the thing is that
I mean,
where
I
live is I'm part of the public too.
I know, but you don't live in that other house.
But if there is somebody who's in there with a family and they're living in a single or a two family house, they're part of the public as well.
Right.
Right? So the thing is should necessarily the neighboring property be permitted to build to
I'm going to use your same argument because you're talking about Weston with their single family stuff not wanting this. What is the difference here?
Well, the thing is that if you're talking about, there's a big difference between having like a quarter acre lot size
versus
building a building right up to your lot line 10 feet.
So you're saying
they could,
I thought they had to use the existing FAR on the building.
No, that's my biggest objection. To the affordable housing overlay
is that
they're going to eliminate all the rules that everybody else
is
subject
to. So the density goes out of the question. Okay.
Right. So the thing is, they allow much higher. It's not even a little bit, it's not a density bonus. It's like many times over, setbacks just eliminated, and it's all done as of right, so you can't even object. Right.
Right. Well, that's an important part
right.
of it.
Yeah. So I don't think it's the right solution.
Yeah.
And I think in many ways it's being done almost as a vendetta against people who are living in not the highest density parts of town. I mean, I live in a C1 density, so my FAR is like 1.21 in a 0.075.
C1, I thought you were a BA zone.
Residentials have to follow the C1 rules.
Okay.
Right? So that's what, so I live in one of the denser parts of town. Much of the eastern part of the city is residence C1 densities for housing, so that's why you see a lot of triple deckers,
right.
two and three family
Whereas
homes.
Whereas West Cambridge is
lower density. It's not all of West Cambridge, but some parts of West Cambridge are lower density. But then again, historically, there'll be people who might be born in East Cambridge in the high density, you know, side by side buildings who said, you know, you saved their money and they wanted to live in a place of a little bit, you know, with a yard and whatever. So they moved to another part of Cambridge because that's what they wanted. And now they're being treated as though somehow they are some bad person because, you know, they're living it exclusively. Even though, in fact, they weren't poor, they weren't wealthy people when they bought those places out in
Westby. But some
right?
are.
What's happened is the world has changed, and now there's been this recent competition from all quarters that have been driving the prices up.
Yeah.
But I don't think that should invalidate some of the choices that people made when they decided to live in a residence B, like a two-family district.
Right. But I guess if you just recently bought one of those houses for $4 million or $5 million,
well,
you may not...
Much, right?
What are you talking about?
Resident A
mansions. I'm talking
mansions,
about resident A.
Yeah,
yeah,
right. Okay.
But according to this,
right.
you could buy another next
right.
door to it and
but,
do something.
Right. Now, I just don't see where that's going to be solving problems, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I just think that's sort of being done almost sort of as to sort of thumb your nose at certain
individuals. Yeah, it's trying to say do your share, which I think is
right.
what we're saying to these other... It's complicated.
It is complicated. It is complicated.
I mean, I think there's ways it could be done where people wouldn't object. If they, you're going to have... If it was, like, 4 units on an existing FAR...
Right.
Okay.
I mean, the thing is, the issue is not who's the owner, who's going to live in it. The issue is why...
Well, no, for some people it is who's going to live in it.
That's fine, but that's true everywhere. That's true.
Well,
that's true in residency one as well, right? Some people like or don't like who the neighbors are going to be. That's how it's been in every city,
everywhere.
Yeah,
but if they already know it's going to be... affordable, that word, ridiculous, as you have said.
Right. I have another sort of philosophical objection, which is that I actually don't like the idea of government or government agencies, government-supported agencies, taking over bigger and bigger fractions of the housing stock of the city. I have posed the question on the housing working group of the Envision Cambridge. Well, what do you think is the ideal percentage of government regulated housing should be as part of the housing stock? And people are always evasive. All right. So right now, Cambridge already.
You could show that here.
Show a little bit
that's
of this
very
here.
Nice. Yeah.
Right. So Cambridge actually right now, just in terms of subsidized units, and the numbers are a little old, but the percentages are still more or less accurate.
Okay.
So Cambridge is just shy of 15% right now.
Right.
And, you know, and with the inclusionary zoning, that is on the rise because you're requiring 20% of all the new larger buildings to be have these set aside units.
So this number, we're the 11th in the state?
It's 11th out of 351.
Oh, municipalities.
So the notion that somehow Cambridge is not doing its part or it's providing an inadequate supply of affordable
housing. Or that we need more
units,
and more, which we do. So,
it's just fiction, right?
Why isn't Brookline in here?
Brookline is further down. Right.
I edited out
most of them, but I did include all the closer ones. So Brookline is at about 9.4%. Interestingly, Somerville is at 7.9%, which is the state average. Excuse me, 9.7%, which is the state
rate
average.
Yeah.
Okay. So the thing is that you want to make a case that maybe Somerville ought to be stepping up to the plate a bit. I think
Watertown, I mean, look at Watertown. That's close to us.
Right. So the thing is,
Newton has more than Watertown.
Right. But they're all like half of what Cambridge is producing.
Yeah.
So the thing is that
Arlington.
So Cambridge is going to do a little bit more.
Way down there. Look at
exactly.
that.
Exactly. So Cambridge could do a little bit more, but I don't know that I agree with this notion that somehow there should be this, just a blanket, so, you know, that somehow, I mean, let me just say that, you know, when I asked this A Better Cambridge group about what do you think the ideal percentage should be? They were always evasive. They never answer the question. They just say more, more, more.
So has anyone answered your question?
No. But the thing is, I did look at the Cambridge Residence Alliance and the platform that they were promoting for the 2017 election.
And what they
said, 20% low income, 5% middle income. So they say it should be 25%. Right? Now,
I would go more for the middle income. We need more middle income.
I agree. But the thing is as Patrick Barrett and others have pointed out, middle income housing is market housing. The thing is right now things are a little out of, you know, out of whack.
But the
thing is, if you're a middle income earner, you're not looking to apply to a government agency for your housing. You're looking for an affordable place to live.
Right. Those are people I really care about. The people that are making more than middle income poverty.
They want to build up a little equity in whatever they do. So that's if they're going to buy as opposed to rent, that's what they're looking for. You know. So I don't think the political groups in this city, ABC and Cambridge Residence Alliance, don't seem to care about that at all. You know, which bothers me. By the way, I've been told that they privately, the people with the Residence Alliance, would want an even higher percentage of regulated housing, like up to a third of all.
All housing? For low income or for any?
And there are some very negative consequences of having too high a fraction. For example...
Well, tax base.
Well, what happens is that when you... Regulated housing, you know, the taxes are based on an income stream. And it's not a lot of income stream on those. So they pay a lot less taxes than the rest of the housing stock. So the more you regulate, the more you shift the burden onto the existing privately owned housing stock. And then you say, well, then people will rebel. People will revolt. They'll say, well, we're not going to watch our property taxes go through the roof. So how do you mitigate that? You build more commercial development.
Right.
That's what has happened. Even during the rent control days, that's what happened. You had dramatic increases in commercial development to cover the bills. You know, it's a liberal city. It wants to spend pretty liberally on programs or whatever. How do you cover the costs? Well, you know, if you take some of the housing out of the equation, you either shift it onto the rest of the residential or you go for broke with commercial. So there are consequences to these policies. And what bothers me is how evasive city officials and these political groups are when you even ask them a straight question. So that bothers me a lot. So anyway, there's
Among
more to say
things.
About this.
Yes.
So, we'll talk about what they did
right.
when we come back in a few minutes on Cambridge Inside Out.